Do you obsess over cold cases?
Do you go down endless rabbit holes on online forums, searching for clues to solve your pet case?
Are you an armchair sleuth? If so, we'd like to invite you to check out our new podcast, Citizen Detective.
I'm Mike Morford.
I'm Nama Cates.
And I'm Dr. Lee Meller. We work hand-in-hand with citizen detectives just like you to examine some of the most puzzling unsolved mysteries out there.
Citizen Detective is out right now, and new episodes drop every other Saturday.
Subscribe now so you don't miss a single episode of Citizen Detective.
You're listening to Missing Persons, brought to you by Abject Entertainment. Be sure to check out some of the other great true crime podcasts from this network, including The Murder in My Family,
DNA ID,
Beyond Bizarre True Crime,
Zodiac Speaking,
and Scene of the Crime. All of these podcasts are available for you to binge on right now, wherever you listen to podcasts. Subscribe where you're listening to this podcast so you don't miss an episode.
The views and opinions expressed by guests on this podcast do not necessarily represent those of the podcast, its creators, or sponsors. If you would like to discuss a missing persons case on this podcast, please be sure to visit missingpersonspodcast.net. This episode may contain unsettling or disturbing subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to Missing Persons, a podcast dedicated to spreading the word about people who have vanished under mysterious or unexplained circumstances and the family members who are looking for answers. I'm Jess Betancourt.
And I'm Mike Morford. Together, we created this podcast to help give a voice to people who continue to search for their missing loved ones, in some cases, even after decades have gone by. In each episode, you'll hear from Jess giving listeners the backstory and the basic facts of the disappearance.
Then Mike will speak with someone who's intimately connected to the missing person, and his guest will share their story with us.
Please stay tuned at the conclusion of this episode to hear about our Patreon program and our commitment to help find people who have gone missing. We'll also share with you where you can find more information and how you can join our team and help our efforts. You'll get recommendations for other podcasts we think you'll enjoy and more.
So sit back and enjoy this episode, and who knows, maybe you can help us find someone who's missing. Episode 55, Tommy Lee Williams. 27-year-old Tommy Lee Williams has been missing from Rochester, New York since February 2, 2022. Born in 1995, he was 26 when he was last seen, but his birthday on May 28th has come and gone with no word from him. Even more concerning, Tommy's son turned 3 years old since Tommy vanished. Tommy had regularly scheduled visits with his child, whom he cherished. His family says he never would have missed a visit, much less his son's birthday. He has a good relationship with his son's mom, Brianna, even though they are no longer together. Missing such a milestone in his son's life is totally out of character for Tommy. Tommy worked in landscaping and did odd jobs. He was the kind of guy who was always helping out the neighbors and mowing lawns for senior citizens. His family describes him as friendly and giving. His sister Tia says that the two were best friends, and it's just unthinkable that he would disappear without contacting her. But that's what happened. There's been no trace of Tommy for more than 6 months. Tommy was reported missing on February 3rd by his mother Joyce, who is our guest today. Police took his disappearance seriously because it was notably inconsistent with everything his family knew about Tommy and his priorities. They have declared his disappearance to be suspicious. Lieutenant Greg Bellow of the Rochester Police Department recently did a Crime Stoppers video about Tommy, talking about who he was and asking for anyone on the east side of the city who might have seen anything to come forward or call in an anonymous tip. Police found a commercial business's surveillance footage of Tommy around noon on the last day he was seen. He appeared on camera at Goodman and Garson Avenues at a local convenience store. The video shows him talking to some people at the corner store and sitting on a bench. It also shows him approaching a car stopped at the traffic light and speaking to the driver. It seems likely he was asking for some cash or some smokes. Then he returned to the bench. After a second, the driver of the car beckoned him back over and may have handed him something. Then Tommy crossed the street and walked out of sight of the camera and has never been seen again. As I said, police don't seem to know whether there was any criminal element involved in Tommy's disappearance or what led up to it, but they have said that he may be in danger. His mom says that she believes one of Tommy's current girlfriend's four exes may have had it out for Tommy. Apparently, Tommy told someone that he had been threatened by this guy who wanted to fight him. Tommy was upset by this. On the day Tommy was last seen, Joyce returned home from one of her three jobs to find Tommy not home and his girlfriend cleaning the basement. She told Joyce that Tommy went out with friends. This was not something that was normal for Tommy to do at that hour of the day. It has to be said that Joyce is suspicious of the girlfriend and her ex who threatened her son. However, the girlfriend has stated that she, too, does not believe Tommy would have left on his own. Joyce says police pinged Tommy's phone to within 3 miles of the tower near where he vanished, but they can't find it. The ping area is still too large to accurately pinpoint the phone's location. It just shows the general area. Police retrieved his last texts, but they didn't contain any helpful information. Joyce has been hanging posters and flyers that she says have been ripped down. She organized a march to the public safety building to attract attention to her son's case and has given interviews to some local news, but Tommy Williams remains missing. Someone knows something, and in the middle of downtown Rochester, someone must have seen something. Tommy Lee Williams is 5'9" tall and weighs 180 pounds. He has a face tattoo near his left eye. He was last seen wearing gray-ripped jeans and a Nike hooded sweatshirt that was distinct. It was red on top and dark blue on the bottom. He was also wearing a fluorescent orange winter hat. Mike Morford sat down to talk with Joyce Williams about her son's case. That conversation is coming up after a word from our sponsors.
Hi, Joyce, and thank you for coming on Missing Persons to talk about your son Tommy's case.
Hello.
I appreciate you coming on. I know this has been a tough time, missing your son and not knowing where he's at and stuff. How have you been getting through this time? What have you been doing to sort of make it through all this?
Well, I've been trying to stay hopeful and busy, although it seems very dim because it's been going on a little over 4 months now. And I don't know. It's nothing but the Lord keeping me going, you know, because I miss Tommy so much. And I know that it's very unusual for Tommy not to, he would never not come home. That's the thing that makes me so dim about it, because I know Tommy would never not come home and he would never not call me. And I know that his phone, that he don't have his phone. And they haven't located his phone. The phone is in 3 mile radius of my house. And we can't find it. And, you know, it's looking very dim. You know, because every mother knows their child. And for him not to come home and not to have no communication, I know that it's not looking good. But, you know, as time is going on and it's getting, you know, months and months and months, it's starting to, you know, I guess I'm not in reality, but it's starting to hit me.
Yeah. And so it's from the sounds of it, Tommy's never done anything like this before, went away from home and didn't come back. It doesn't sound like something he would do.
No, Tommy's a homebody. Tommy would never not come home.
Well, and we're going to get into the circumstances around him disappearing. But before we do, can you tell us a little bit about Tommy, what kind of person he is, a little bit about what was going on in his life leading up to him going missing?
Well, Tommy's a very outgoing person. He's very happy-go-lucky. He's always got a smile on his face. People will remember Tommy for his smile. He does landscaping on his own And in my neighborhood, he has customers that are older. And he has three customers in particular that love him just like he's a grandson to them. And he's very apt to help somebody, you know, even if he only has a dollar and somebody asks him for 50 cents, he'll give it. So he's very outgoing. And well, Tommy's very happy-go-lucky and very friendly and very apt to help. And I miss Tommy. You know, I really do, because me and him ate, you know, we'd sneak off and eat together. I tell him, don't tell the other two. And we dance, you know. He was, you know, just a good son and a good father. He's an excellent father. And he's just a good person. But I don't know what happened. You know, he has one son that just turned 3 in April. Tommy went missing February 2nd of 2022. He has one son that just turned 3 in April, but he's not with the mother. He was with a girl that had 4 kids with 4 different fathers. And you hear little bits and pieces, but you don't know, you know. Like, I guess one of the fathers had threatened him and came here with 3 guys, and I didn't find out till after he went missing. 2 weeks before he went missing, that happened. The day of he went missing, he told his friend that a couple of guys wanted to fight him over that girl that has the 4 kids with 4 different dads. And so I don't know, but all I know is that Tommy would never not call me. He calls me 3-4 times a day, and he would never not contact me.
Well, let's get into that. Let's talk a little bit about when he did disappear. How did you find out or determine that Tommy actually was missing?
Well, see, here's the thing. I was working 2 jobs. So I had went to my day job. And then after that, I went grocery shopping and I came home. And the girl was staying with me with the kids because she had lost her place to stay. So I came home and I said, where's Tommy? And she said, I think he went out with one of his friends. And that was very unusual. But anyway, I bring in the groceries and then I went to my other job. I worked all night there. Then I left there and I went straight from there to my other job, worked all day. She never called me and told me Tommy never made it home. So I had worked all day that next day. And then when I came home that evening, I'm like, where's Tommy? And she said he never came home. And that's when I called the police because I knew immediately there was something wrong. And when I came home, she was cleaning downstairs in the basement. And I was like, what are you cleaning? She was like, oh, it's a mess down there. He was very particular about his music because he likes to make music and rap. And he has a music, like a studio downstairs. And he would never put the thing on its side. And the mouse was broke. And I said, what happened? And she said, I don't know. Maybe he was mad and broke it. I said, no, Tommy wouldn't do that. I said, he wouldn't break his stuff. He's very particular about down here. So with that being said, she never called me to tell me he never made it home. So I didn't find out a whole day until after the fact. Tommy had went missing probably around say between 1 and 2 of February 2nd, and I didn't find out until February 3rd around 6:30 in the evening, and that's when I immediately called the police.
And in your mind right away, you didn't think that he was just out hanging out with someone or decided to leave, something had happened to him in your mind.
I knew something happened. I knew immediately because Tommy just don't do that. If he was not going to come home, he would call me and say, "Mom, I don't want you to worry, but I'm over so-and-so's house." He would never not contact me or let me know.
When you did first contact the police, what did they say? Were they cooperative right away, or did they give you the runaround of, "You've got to wait so long, he's an adult, he can do what he wants"? What happened there?
They were cooperative right away. They made a missing person report, and I guess they went out looking for him and me as well. And that day that I was out looking for him, that evening, all night long, I didn't get home until like 5 a.m. And then I went back out with my oldest son looking for him. A snowstorm hit. And I kept getting stuck in alleys and I was going all over. Plus, you know, it's a lot to this story because this girl, the girl that, you know, I told you about that has the kids, I came to the phone. I was out looking for Tommy and I didn't know. She asked me to use my phone and I didn't know that she connected my phone to one of her kids' iPads that I had got them for Christmas. So when I came back to the car, I saw a conversation from some psychic that's telling me he's still alive. Go on the west side, go here, go there. So I call her and I'm like, "There's some psychic on my phone." She said, "Yeah, I know. I'm actually talking to her." But I didn't know that her and the psychic were friends because the psychic is from Ohio. And I didn't know that she talks to the psychic. So the psychic tells me, "Go on the west side, that there's this black man on a mural and there's a building, a red building that it's on, and then across from it is a white building, and there's a driveway in another building, and in that driveway is a car, and that he's in that car." So I go, she tells me the name of the street to go on. I go over there and I see the black man on the mural. I see everything like she described. There was a car there. It had tinted windows. She described it to a T. She said, "He's in the trunk of the car." Called the police. The police came. They popped the trunk. He wasn't in there. So they're looking at me like I'm crazy because I'm telling them some psychic told me this. So then they leave and they're thinking I'm nuts believing in psychics. So then the psychic tells me, "He's over there. He's near a red garbage can." So I'm out there 12 o'clock at night looking through the alleys. She tells me, "You're hot, you're cold." So I got near the lumber yard. She said, "He's in the lumber yard." So I squeeze through the gate. I go all through the lumber yard looking for him. Then she says, "He's in a mile radius from the lumber yard." So then I go up and down the alleys. I go through different apartments. I'm getting stuck in alleys. I broke the front of the grill of my car, getting stuck in the alley. And then she was like, "He could hear you. He's still alive, but you have to get to him quick." And then she was like, she just went off. She said she had to go take care of her kids or whatever, or go to bed or whatever. So then I was out there looking, and some two girls saw me and Tommy's girlfriend looking, and they wanted to know what was going on. So I told them. And so Tommy's girlfriend got in the car with the girl And they left. And I didn't even know they left. I got stuck in the alley. I'm trying to call her to tell her to come help me. And she's gone. I'm beeping the horn to let them know I'm stuck in the alley at 1 o'clock in the morning in a bad neighborhood. Then finally they come back. And I know they was talking crap about me, but I don't care. But anyway, not once have I seen that girl shed a tear. And I think that all of that was just a front and a deterrent of me to throw me off going over there. You know what I mean?
Almost like a way to get you looking in one direction and not the other?
Yeah, because he doesn't go to the west side.
Sure.
We don't never go to the west side. We live on the east side. I was originally looking over on the east side until that psychic came on my phone. So I was like, when that psychic popped up out of nowhere and I saw she was from Ohio, I'm like to myself, oh, what a blessing from God. This psychic pops up from Ohio and she's apparently knows about it. She's telling me to go over here. And I'm like, God bless you. Oh, thank you. You know, I'm thinking I'm going to find him, when in all actuality, I should have stayed on the east side and kept looking on the east side. And to me, that was very suspicious as well.
Yeah. So it sounds like you're desperate. You're out there listening to this person. You think it's a psychic. You're driving around in the snowstorm just trying to find any sign of your son. And I assume you didn't find any sign of him at all out there.
No.
Now, were you able to find out anything about who saw him last and what they said he did? Or was it his girlfriend that told you that she was the last person to see him, that he went with friends? Were they ever able to track any of these friends down and talk to them? What was their story?
No, he wasn't with no friends. His one friend said that he was with him at six at my house. He was at my house at 5-6 in the morning that morning with his friend. His friend didn't leave until 5-6 in the morning. That's the morning he told his friend, because they were downstairs making music. He told his friend that some dudes wanted to fight him over the girl with the kids, the girl that he was currently with. And then I guess the girlfriend is saying that they got into an argument and he left, say, like I'd say maybe 10 o'clock in the morning around that time, and that he never came back. So then after that, the police, you know, the cameras, they really shouldn't erase every 24 hours. It's too bad that they couldn't keep them. So in the event they have to backtrack, if something happens, they can capture it. But they only was able to find one camera that had him where he was at this corner store on the corner of Goodman and Garson. It's an 18-hour store. It shows him sitting outside the store. He gets up. He walks over to a car that's in the stopped at the light. I don't know if he asked them for change or a cigarette. They must have said no. He went back and sat down. And I've never known him to ask for change. I could see a cigarette. But anyway, goes back. He sits down because I viewed the camera. And they call him back. So then they give him, I don't know if they gave him change or a cigarette. Then he goes back and sits down. They turn the corner. They make a right on the Garson. And then they turn around, and then they make a right on the Goodman going toward Main. So they went on their merry way. But then Tommy goes, he's sitting outside the store. Then all of a sudden he gets up, he crosses Goodman going toward, at the corner of Goodman and Garson, after it crosses, it turns into Webster Avenue. But then there is another part of Garson that's off of Webster. So he could have took Webster Garrison or Parcells Avenue to get home because we live near Culver in East Main. So I don't know, because who's to say that car, even though it turned right on the Goodman going toward Main, who's to say it could have turned around, couldn't have turned around and backtracked. So that's up in the air. And then I don't know whether he took Grand, Garson, or Parcells home. So what I, and he just vanished into thin air. But my concern is 2 weeks before he went missing, it was said that one of her kids' father came here and threatened him with three guys, and he was real upset and called his friend and told his friend about it. And that morning of that he went missing, that he told his friend two dudes wanted to fight him over her. And so I just don't know. So then in the meantime, I went and I've hung posters up, flyers up. I hung flyers up in the stores and all down Culver and Parcells and stuff. And somebody keeps ripping them down.
Oh, almost like they don't want them to be found?
Right. So I feel as though, as much as I don't want to believe that he's not here with me, it just looks so dim. You know, if he's not here with me, then he's being held against his will. And then I'm really scared because, I just don't know. I just wish I knew. I just don't know.
So they had this little bit of a surveillance footage to go on, but from there he disappeared. And you mentioned earlier, I think, that his phone is also missing. Was there any kind of way to access it to see who called him, who he called, who texted him, anything like that that was done, or to maybe even try and ping the phone to locate it?
They ping the phone, but the phone pings that the phone, when you ping a phone, it doesn't tell you the exact spot. It'll say it's in 3 miles radius of the tower. So that means we live on East Main near Culver, but that means it could be anywhere down East Main, anywhere down Culver. It could be on Goodman. It could be anywhere within 3 mile radius of the tower. And
Was there any way to access or check his voicemails or people he called, text messages, things like that?
Well, here's the thing. I'm a get to two different things. Well, as far as that goes, the police retrieved his text message, some of his text messages, and who he last talked to. But they didn't get anywhere with that. So, and another thing that's strange about that girl with the kids is she went, me not knowing anything, plus I'm panicking and everything, she goes down and she gets on the computer and she erased all his messages back from going to back to November. So I don't know why she would do that. So then in the meantime, the phone still hasn't been found. So I don't know. We were going to try, me and my neighbor, because they know about computers, we were going to try to retrieve his messages. So we sent a message to Facebook for, I forget what she said we needed, but they would only send a code to his phone. We needed a code to get into the computer to do whatever we needed, but they would only send it to the phone. And we were trying to tell them, but you can't get through to a live person. That's the problem, because they keep sending the code to that phone. So what I'm thinking on doing is next week paying $200 to T-Mobile, and because I have insurance on that phone, and saying that he lost the phone and they'll send me another one. I can take that phone, take it to T-Mobile. They can turn it on. I have some of his other passwords, and then they can send the code to that phone, and then I can retrieve what got erased or what was erased.
So it sounds it's an uphill battle to try and just piece all this stuff back together and look at the clues to see if they help you find your son.
And it's just a lot of, they shouldn't have it like that. In a situation like this, it should be a live person.
Sure. Have all of the people in Tommy's life, his girlfriend, his friends, people that knew him, have they all been talked to by police, and have they been cooperative and answered questions to try and figure out what happened to him?
Yes. He has a lot of associates. Hey, how you doing? And bye. But he only has friends, less than one hand, that he so-called calls friends, like a brother to him.
And I was going to say, too, as important as it is to talk to the friends to see if they know what happened to Tommy, I think it was also important for them to talk to maybe the people that he may have had run-ins with, problems with, like the father you mentioned of one of these children. You know, was he talked to, you know, the one that threatened Tommy? Has he been cooperative?
No. Because none of her kids' fathers been questioned. Because, okay, one of her kids' father is a drug dealer. And one drives an 18-wheeler. And I don't know about the other ones, but the one in question runs between Rochester, Ohio, and North Carolina. And he's in and out of Rochester. So who's to say if it was him, if he did something to him, who's to say they could have dumped him out of town? You know, and then the police want to question him. And he actually has a warrant here in Rochester, but they can't catch up with him.
Have there been any kind of, like, organized searches with police dogs or anything like that, people walking together looking for any signs of Tommy?
No, the police didn't go with search dogs. And the only thing, you know, they just, some other psychic called that I didn't know at the time, an anonymous caller called my daughter. How she got my daughter's number, I don't know. And she said that he was still alive. He has a head injury. This was when he first went missing. He has a head injury. He's over near not Upper Falls, Lower Falls, in a building, second floor. And so the police went looking, and they couldn't find anything. And then the police traced that call because it came from an unknown caller, and it comes back to a girl that says she's a psychic. But they tried to call her, and they don't get through. And to me, I don't really feel that the police ain't really looking for him. To be honest with you, they're not. I thought they were, but when I called the police department one day, and they told me, headquarters told me, he said, to be honest with you, we don't look for missing people.
So that's not something you want to hear from police, them telling you we don't look for missing people.
That was a slap in the face because I was like, because I saw two police officers in 7-Eleven and I was telling them about Tommy and they do nothing about Tommy. And I said, how do you not know nothing about Tommy? I said, when you all should know something about Tommy. So that's when I called headquarters. And he was like, to be honest with you, I don't know about Tommy. He said, I'm just going to be frank with you. We don't look for missing people. Unless they're like got like maybe say autism or some kind of handicappedness or some kind of mental problem. So I was very upset about that. And then I did a protest downtown in front of police headquarters, and the lieutenant came out and spoke with me, and he denied that. He was like, "Who told you that? That's not true." And I told him the name. And I also, somebody from Mary's group called because I told the group about it, and they, I don't think they believed me. So they called headquarters, and he told her the same thing. But the lieutenant denied it. And then when I told them the guy at headquarters' name, he said he didn't know it. But I think that was just a cover-up. So the lieutenant said that they were still going to investigate. The captain from my neighborhood, the police section from my neighborhood, said that they were still, you know, going to try to do what they could do. The investigator on the case said they were going to still try to look into whatever they could look into. But when I had a meeting with them, there's no leads. There's nothing to go on. They're at a standstill. But I feel as though that girl with the Tommy's girlfriend with the four kids, I feel as though they need to take all those fathers in for questioning.
It sounds like, in your mind at least, that the only real people he had a problem with at the time he disappeared was one of those fathers.
Right. Well, yeah, because they bring some guys here to end him and threaten him. And so, and Tommy's not an argumentative person. He gets real upset. And, you know, when that happened. And that's when he called his friend. Now, had he confided in me and told me about it, he wouldn't have been missing. Because I would have intervened.
Yeah. And
I would have made sure he had my car. I would have made sure that, you know, we worked out that situation in a peaceful way.
Yeah. And not being able to help him, that must be pretty tough for you. Does that weigh on you at all, thinking that if I could have only done this, he might still be here?
Well, yeah, because I feel as though, you know, not for nothing, I was working two jobs. I was in and I was like always in a hurry, rushing in and out. I never had time to really, I don't feel as though that I paid attention enough. Maybe if I would have paid attention more, you know. But yeah. I just, he would have confided in me.
Yeah. And obviously you're just working hard trying to pay your bills and stuff like that. So it's, you know, I don't think anyone would fault you for Tommy going missing, but it must still be pretty tough on you personally. I'm curious what, at this point now that he's been missing, what hasn't been done that you hope will be done, that police, you're hoping, will try something different? What might that be?
To be honest with you, I don't, I mean, if I had my way, I would say I want every police officer in every wooded area, I want them to treat it like it's a sniper out there. I want them to go in backyards. I want them to fly the helicopter with the flashlight. I want them to do everything in their will and their power to find my son.
And at this point, you've been so desperate, you've listened to people that claim to be witnesses, you've driven around in snowstorms looking for him, so it seems like you want to try something different to try and find him.
Well, his brother goes out looking for him, and we try to go out looking for him. I mean, we haven't stopped going out looking for him, you know, but it's just, you know, hard, you know, because Rochester has so many open areas and so many wooded areas and so many vacant places. you know?
Yeah.
And I really don't feel that the police are put to enough effort.
Yeah. And, you know, communities sometimes when this kind of thing happens, people will start talking. There'll be rumors or whispers of something happening. Has there been any rumors that have come around of what happened or if anyone knows anything? Have you heard anything like that?
Nobody will talk. Nobody. And that's there, you know, I know people that know some shady people and nobody knows nothing.
Yeah. Maybe people are afraid to talk or don't want to, you know, they don't want to get involved.
Maybe so.
Yeah. Is there any kind of reward being offered?
Well, Crime Stoppers, the investigator told me Crime Stoppers is offering a reward, but I'm going to have to call Crime Stoppers because I don't see anything posted. It says if you know anything, call Crime Stoppers, but it doesn't say, well, call Crime Stoppers in the event you give a tip leading to his body or information on where he is and it leads to an arrest, you will be paid X amount of dollars. It doesn't say that.
Yeah, because maybe someone out there that does have information or has heard something will come forward if they know there's a reward. Sometimes that makes people speak up.
Right. Mm-hmm. And they're not. So, you know, they say it does say to call Crime Stoppers. I've hung posters up. I even made a number from Google. Mm-hmm. I have a Google number on my phone. So, like when you call me, my phone will ring on my regular number. But when somebody's called, somebody can also call me from that Google number and leave me a message or call and talk to me and they don't have my regular number.
Okay. So it's a way for you just to get information without having to give out your regular phone number.
Right. And nobody still has reached out.
Yeah. Do you want to share that phone number on the podcast in case anyone listening does have that information? You can give that phone number out if you'd like to.
Yes, it is 1-585-210-0620. That's 1-585-210-0620. And my name is Joyce. I'm Tommy's mother. And if you have any information, please call, text, you know, anything. Just please call me.
Yeah, it's pretty clear you just want to know what happened to your son and where he's at. And
like I told his girlfriend, I said, you know, because she won't talk either. She's very low. She's very hung low. And I put her out after he went missing. And she's very low and quiet. She won't talk. And I said, you know, if you know who did it, just tell me where he is so I can have closure. Just put an anonymous letter at the corner store or something and tell them to give it to me. Just let me have closure. Just let me give him that last hug. Let me put him to rest. And nothing. I don't know who did it, Joy. She's very flip at the mouth. I don't know where he is.
So it sounds like at this point you're hoping for the best, but you're prepared for the worst. If he is, something's happened to him, you at least want to have him home to give him a proper goodbye.
Yeah.
It's got to be.
I want to know, even though I'm hoping for the best, but like I said, it looks dim, but I'm prepared for the worst as well as you think you're prepared, you know, but you're really not. You'll never be really prepared for something like that. Every time they find a body in the river here or in the wooded area or something, I literally shake, you know.
Yeah.
But thank God none has been him.
But yeah, that not knowing part has got to be really tough.
Yes, it is. And I'm just at my wit's end. You know, I have the church praying. I have people praying. I keep posting his picture up on different groups that I belong to. And I keep posting his picture up on Facebook, you know, because I don't want people to forget. You know, I want him found. And I think, and I even went on the news, because when I did that protest downtown at the police station, the news people came, and I was on Channel 8 News, I was on Channel 13 News, and I had said on the news, if you have any information or anything, please, because I need closure, I need my son. Please, you know, if you know anything.
Yeah. Well, keep up the fight and don't give up hope, and we'll do our part here to spread the word and let people know that your son's still missing, and hopefully somehow you find out the truth about what happened to him.
It's so sad, because not to say that anybody deserves to be hurt, but Tommy especially never deserved to be hurt. Oh. He's such a good father, and his son just turned 3 in April. When I have Tommy's flyers taped to my car window, and I have to tell him, Daddy's lost right now, and I don't know where Daddy is because Daddy's lost, and so we don't touch Daddy's picture because we want people to see it so they can help bring Daddy home because Daddy's lost. So that's the only thing I could come up with to tell a 3-year-old.
Yeah, it's tragic you have to deal with all this, but then at the same time, his son, he just is 3 years old. You have to figure out a way to explain to him what's going on.
Right, and I know he misses his daddy. He misses him so much. You know, I didn't get him for a couple months because I was going through too much. Then I went and got him, you know, and when he's here, he sleeps with me. He would either sleep with me or his father. And then the night he heard my other son coming up the steps when I first got him. And he woke up in the night and got so excited. He thought it was Daddy. And I said, no, honey, it's not Daddy. It's your uncle. And, you know, I know I know he's going through emotional stuff, even though he's 3, because him and his dad were so close. And Tommy's such a good father.
Well, I hope somehow, some way you figure out what's going on and where he's at. I hope somehow you can be reunited. But as you mentioned, if something happened to him, God forbid, then you want to know that too. And I hope you find out the truth, whatever it may be.
Well, you know, I was kind of hoping, I don't know how this would happen, but I was hoping that the FBI would get involved. You know, I don't know how much it costs. I'd be willing to work out payments with them, but I really need my son.
Yeah, and hopefully, you know, the police take it the next step and keep on looking and don't give up on it. And,
you know,
an answer.
With that being said, Rochester has gotten so bad. There's a murder here. Every day there's a murder or a shooting. Every day. The police can't keep up. So in my heart of hearts, I know that they're not really dwelling on Tommy. They're not. Maybe the investigators are trying, but even with that being said, the investigators are busy out here with these doggone murders. And it's just crazy. It is just crazy. Rochester has never, ever been this bad as it's bad now. I never thought I would see the day that Rochester got this bad.
Yeah, it's a lot of towns have, over the years, have gotten worse with crime and drugs and things like that. So, unfortunately, it's a growing thing across the country, I think.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Missing Persons. If you can provide any information to help solve the case we discussed in this episode, please contact the appropriate authorities.
If you enjoy this podcast, please take a moment to tell your friends about Missing Persons and invite them to listen to the show. Word of mouth will help us grow and bring these cases to a larger audience. You can also help us by taking a moment to rate and review Missing Persons on the platform you're listening to us now on.
We'd like to tell you a little bit about our Patreon program. If you visit patreon.com/missingpodcast, you can sign up to help this podcast through ongoing monthly support. As a thank you, we'll give you an on-air shout-out, a thank you card and sticker, plus you'll get early access to ad-free episodes of the show and any bonus content.
Your Patreon support also goes towards helping the missing, because every dollar that we earn through Patreon will be split with charlieproject.org, the wonderful website that's been sharing information about so many missing persons cases for years. We hope you'll consider supporting the show. Just a reminder that new episodes of Missing Persons air every other Saturday. If you want to find us on social media, you can search Facebook for Missing Persons Podcast. And we're also on Twitter with the handle @missing_pod. And of course, you can find us on our website, missingpersonspodcast.net. As we wrap up this episode, we'd like to play a preview of a true crime podcast we think you'll like. It's called Morbidology. Be sure to give it a listen. On behalf of Jess Betancourt, this is Mike Morford saying thanks, and we'll see you next time on Missing Persons.
Morbidology is a weekly true crime podcast hosted by me, Emily G. Thompson, author of Unsolved Child Murders, Unsolved Murders, Cults Uncovered, and Mysteries Uncovered.
911 emergency.
My son shot my husband. I need an ambulance. He's bleeding.
Each week on Morbidology, I uncover a new true crime case using investigative research combined with source audio.
I just snatched it from her. My son took it and it's like, I just hit her with it.
Morbidology is a victim-focused podcast that mostly covers cases that aren't widely documented in mainstream media. I also like to take an in-depth look at any systemic failures which had a part to play in the crime.
Do you know why you're here?
For a home invasion gone terribly wrong.
Listen to Morbidology across all podcast platforms.
Missing Persons is produced under the name Abjack Entertainment by Mike Morford and Jessica Betancourt. It's hosted and edited by Mike Morford, with research and writing by Jessica Betancourt. Be sure to listen every other Saturday for an all-new episode of Missing Persons.